This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Now that Hillary Clinton is the Democratic Party nominee for president, and a majority of Bernie Sanders supporters seem to be throwing their weight behind her, it seems to have freed the party from paying lip service to progressive values once more. News reports point out that Clinton and the party are in a fundraising frenzy, turning to their friends on Wall Street and the fossil fuel industry. But not everyone is aligning behind Clinton, despite the specter of Donald Trump. Third-party candidates Jill Stein and Gary Johnson have jumped in the polls. Progressives in particular, however, fear that Stein will play spoiler in the November election and hand Trump a victory by siphoning off too many votes away from Clinton in swing states. The claim that Ralph Nader's Green Party presidential bid in 2000 handed George W. Bush a win over Al Gore is particularly persistent. My guest is Kevin Zeese. He's the co-director of It's Our Economy and an organizer with PopularResistance.org. Zeese was a spokesperson for Ralph Nader in 2004, and he just co-wrote a piece with Margaret Flowers about this issue. Welcome to the program, Kevin.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, let's talk about the claims themselves. This is just a very, very common theme. People are very angry at those who say they will never vote for Hillary Clinton and they're going to vote for Jill Stein. And the Gore-Bush election is very much in people's minds. What, as far as you can tell, are the claims? What did they base this claim that it was Nader's fault that Bush won in 2000?
Well, it's a very simplistic and false claim, but one of the most effective propaganda efforts by the Democratic Party in the 21st century. It persists despite the facts. The claim is that Gore lost by under 600 votes. Ralph Nader won 97,000 votes. Therefore, Nader stole the election from Gore. But there's lots of problems with that. First off, the reason that Gore lost the election, let's just be very clear right from the beginning. He lost 300,000 Democratic registered voters to George Bush. He lost over 200,000 progressive, self-described liberal votes to George Bush. If he can't win that base of liberals and Democrats, he lost the election to George Bush. You know, Nader only got about 30,000 votes in each of those categories of liberals and Democrats. Bush got hundreds of thousands. Bush defeated him with a little help, of course, from Scalia and Thomas. On top of that, it's important to remember that if Gore had won his home state of Tennessee, Florida would be irrelevant. If Gore had won the home state of Bill Clinton, Florida would have been irrelevant. And so this concoction that, you know, they don't want to face up to losing 300,000 Democrats to George Bush, 200,000 liberals to George Bush. Instead, they want to focus on Nader's 25, 30,000 votes in those categories. It's just absurd.
Let's look at what Ben Jealous said in an interview on Democracy Now! And you cite this in your article. Because in the end, it seems like it did, of course, come down to Florida during the actual election. If we set aside the fact that Gore should have won the two states that you mentioned and focus on Florida, according to Ben Jealous, George W. Bush got into the White House because Al Gore lost by about 900 votes in Florida. Ralph Nader got 90,000. The reports, the studies that went back and looked at those voters said 60% of them would have gone for Gore if Nader wasn't on the ballot there. What's wrong with that picture?
That's Ben Jealous, of course, worked for the NAACP, which is basically an arm of the Democratic Party. And Ben Jealous is an apologist for Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party. So just first off, let's start with his bias and get that out in the open. Second, what's wrong with that is that CNN did an exit poll the day of the election in 2000. And the election poll found that Nader took equal number of votes from Republican voters and Democratic voters, the registered voters voted for him, and that if he had not been in the race, Gore would have lost by more, by 2%. And why is that? Because a lot of the voters who came out and voted when Nader was on the ballot would not have bothered to vote for either Gore or for Bush. You know, about hundreds of thousands of Democrats stayed home that day rather than come out and vote for Al Gore. If 1% of the people who stayed home, if 1% of the Democrats or 1% of the liberals who voted for George Bush had voted for Al Gore, he would have been president. So he lost his base. Why go out of your way to blame Nader? I'll tell you why they do it. They go out of their way to blame Nader because they don't want to face the real reality. The Democrats don't want to face the real reality. That someone who had a history, Al Gore, of corporatism and militarism supporting every war back to Vietnam was not a very popular position compared to someone who was running as, I'm not saying he was, but he was running as a compassionate conservative who did not believe in nation building. And so a corporate militarist versus a compassionate conservative who didn't believe in nation building, George Bush beat that. It was a more popular position to take, even among Democrats, even among liberals, and it convinced many of the Democrats to stay home and not bother voting for Al Gore. So that's the election about. They don't want to face that because their money comes from Wall Street. Their money comes from big business. And if they face the reality that corporate militarism is not the way to run for president, that has to make them rethink everything. The Democrats have to then go back to their funders and realize taking money from Wall Street, taking money from big business, taking money from weapons makers actually does not work politically. It's not a good trade-off. And they followed the
We have to remember the 2000 election, of course, happened when George W. Bush was a relatively blank slate. I mean, he had been governor of Texas, but this was before the September 11th attacks, of course. He was president for only about a year, less than a year, really, when the September 11th attacks happened. And then we see history judging G.W. Bush by those actions that came. But at the time during the election, I had not heard these statistics that hundreds of thousands of Democrats and, you know, non-Democrat liberals had ended up voting for George W. Bush, which is pretty remarkable. In fact, I remember hearing that Arabs and Arab Americans were voting more Republican than Democrat. All of that changed after the September 11th attacks.
That's right. And it's and the Muslims and Arabs are a very good point, because we've talked to Muslim political activists, and they said that when in 2000, when they contacted the Bush campaign, they got a response. Someone high up in the Bush campaign would get back to them. If they couldn't get George Bush to an event, they would get a high-level person to an event. When they contacted the Gore campaign, they ignored them. The Democrats didn't call back. The Gore campaign didn't call back. And so they felt dissed, you know, by the Gore campaign, and they went to the Bush campaign. And so, yes, that's one of the problems with Al Gore's campaign. He had a lot of hubris. He had a lot of he's better than anyone else, knows better than anybody else. He can do this without anyone's help. He ran away from Bill Clinton, who was at 65% in the polls at the time. He was a very popular president. The economy was going well. There were lots of reasons he could have run differently. Then he picked, as possibly the worst vice presidential choice, Joe Lieberman, one of the more conservative Democrats. He essentially was at the senator for insurance industry. He came from Connecticut. And he was one of the most aggressive militarists and aggressive supporters of Israeli Zionism. So he was a very unpopular choice. So that just added to Gore's history of being a corporate militarist. And so it was a very poorly run campaign. And for them to look around to find a scapegoat, and they, you know, if you want to blame things, you could blame the weather. It was too hot that day to go vote. I didn't want to go vote. It was too hot. You could blame the butterfly ballot in Palm Beach, which actually did cause a lot of missed votes, because the Palm Beach butterfly ballot, there are people who intended to vote for Gore because the ballot was so messed up, they voted for Pat Buchanan. Mm. It's because of the way the ballot was set up. So that was a legitimate concern. There were also many blacks stopped from going to vote. There were roadblocks in black communities. There was a concerted effort to keep blacks from voting. So there's lots of reasons to criticize the Florida election. But the bottom line is Gore lost hundreds of thousands of votes to liberals and to Democrats, to George Bush. And that's the real reason. Everything else is fake. Because they didn't learn that lesson, that corporate militarism is a lousy way to run a campaign, they then picked John Kerry, who also lost. He couldn't even beat George Bush after he was so unpopular. Obama was able to get around it because he's African-American. He's got great rhetoric. He also had a very much a blank slate. He was a new senator. And so, like George Bush in 2000, Obama could make his own picture on it, on his slate, and define himself the way he wanted to. So he defined himself as anti-war, anti-Iraq war, and he also defined himself as a populist, you know, talking about health care and those kinds of issues. So Obama was able to overcome that because he had no record to run on. Hillary Clinton right now should be, you know, landsliding Donald Trump. And because she is so disliked, and she's disliked because of her history. her history of supporting trade agreements, you know, being part of the destruction of the social safety net, being in favor of Wall Street, and being in favor of every war that's ever come before her. She also is a corporate militarist, and she's very unpopular. And she's probably going to win because Donald Trump is insane, and you know, his racism and his bigotry and his picking fights with everybody, you know, is just not a good way to run a presidential campaign. So she's probably going to win easily in the Electoral College. The demographics of the United States have changed so much: more Latino, less white male voters. The demographics are going the Democrat Party way. So I think she's going to win an easy victory, despite her really being so disliked by so many voters.
Right. In fact, Kevin, there was a New York Times statistical analysis that found that just a few, you know, less than 20% of the eligible voting public in the U.S. voted in the primary elections for either Trump or Clinton. And then if you just look at the percentage of the population as a whole, it was 9%. So two of these highly unpopular candidates running against one another. And of course, what's going to either end up happening is a lot of people are going to stay at home because they just can't bear to cast their votes, or they're going to throw their vote behind Hillary Clinton as a lesser of two evils choice, or they're going to go for Gary Johnson or Jill Stein. Now, let's talk about this.
That's
talk about applying the 2000 story to the 2016 story. 16 years later, we're told Stein is going to play the Nader effect. And, you know, somehow Gary Johnson doesn't get the same treatment. But how do you respond to this standard argument?
Well, basically, there's two myths that the Democrats are running on. One is the Nader myth, which we've talked about. The other is the fear of Trump myth. And I call it a myth because if you look at all the election prognostications, and 538, you know, there's a good compilation of all the polls and breaks it down by state and then does an analysis of the Electoral College. It's about a 70% chance that Hillary Clinton wins the Electoral College, a 30% chance for Trump. So he's almost out of it already, and that number is getting worse and worse every day for Trump. I don't know if he's going to reverse it or not, but he's been just running a terrible campaign. Now, what's different than this year than that one, Gary Johnson is more likely to get the most votes of a third party just because Trump is so hated. And the
by
Trump
his
fear
own base,
Nader,
by the own Republican Party base, he's hated.
Oh my
so much.
Gosh, it's amazing. Every day Republicans are leaving him. Every day Republican donors are leaving him. Republican thinkers in the neocon world are going to Hillary Clinton. Every day you see that shift from Republican funders, donors, politicians, thinkers, writers, all George Will, all going toward Hillary Clinton. It's just an incredible thing. And so Johnson's going to pick up some support from that because a lot of these Republicans don't want to go to Hillary, but they want to vote against Trump, and they don't want to vote for Hillary. So Johnson's the logical choice for a Republican since he's a small government, low tax, pro-business kind of guy. He's even pro-Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is so insane that I can't imagine anyone voting for him. But anyway, he's favored TPP. Jill Stein is running a great campaign. She was the earliest Green ever to get matching funds, and they only get that during the primaries. So she's got a lot of money to spend between now and the end of the Green convention. So there'll be an advertising campaign, which is unheard of in Green politics because we run with, you know, just people's money and haven't had the success of Bernie Sanders in doing that. And she has a really strong vice presidential candidate, Ajamu Baraka, who is a great human rights activist, has been a human rights leader for many years. He comes from a radical black analysis, which I think is so needed in this debate. He's the only African-American running out of eight president and vice presidential candidates in national campaigns. So that's a great team. And they're putting forth a great message that's very popular with voters. The question is, can they overcome the fear of Trump? And it may happen that as the election gets closer and this fear of Trump becomes more obvious a myth, that the Nader myth will have no impact and people will recognize they really have the freedom to vote for what they want. That's a rarity in the United States. Most people in the United States hold their nose and vote. They don't get to vote for candidates they want. They get forced between two oligarch candidates, two elite candidates. That's all we ever get to choose from except for the third parties. This year is an unusual year because Trump is such a poor candidate that people really have the freedom to vote for what they want. So this should be a very good year for both the Greens and the Libertarians. I think the key is for people to work for is to get them into the debates. That is the most important thing. We need to have those voices out there. We don't want a two-way debate between Trump and Clinton. That's going to be like useless for the body politic to learn anything new, to think about any new issues. If you get Johnson and Stein in there and their VPs, that would be a fantastic debate that would really open up the political culture to a lot of new ideas. So that would be a great thing, I think, for the country.
Kevin, I want to talk about Sanders' candidacy because this, when Sanders ran for the primary election and just electrified so many people around the country, seemed to obviously touch a serious nerve in the country. Do you think that he politicized people who ordinarily wouldn't vote in elections, and then for Clinton supporters to turn around and expect all of those same people that he energized and activated to simply hand their vote over to her? You know, that just seems like an unlikely scenario. Either those people who would never have gotten involved in the election, either they end up voting for Jill Stein or for nobody at all, right? I mean, it's not like she and the establishment Democrat ever had those votes to begin with. Is that accurate, you think?
I think that's for a large chunk of those voters.
Right, not
true.
For all Bernie Sanders supporters, of course.
That's right. The Bernie Sanders supporters, a lot of those Bernie Sanders supporters were Democrats.
Right.
People vote Democrat. And traditionally, when you have an insurgent candidate like Sanders or Kucinich or Jesse Jackson or Howard Dean, first off, the primary system for the Democrats is so rigged that they never win. All they can do is energize a base and keep that base in the Democratic Party if they're, traditional Democrats. Mm-hmm. And so that meant that.
But Sanders came closer than any of those other people you mentioned. 46% of pledged delegates at the convention were for him.
85 to 90% of those kind of voters, though, do stay with the Democrats traditionally. Now, I think Sanders is different. He did run the most effective insurgent campaign in decades. I can't think of the most recent one that did better. The key thing was he was able to raise money in small donations, because one of the key ways they rig the primaries is they have these Super Tuesdays, multiple big states all over the country at once. Then all of March is March Madness, when you have two dozen states voting or having caucuses in 1 month. And for a campaign with no money, which most insurgents have no money, that's an impossible task. You can't compete unless you can go on the air with advertising. Sanders was able to beat that. He was able to raise enough money to run a legitimate campaign against this rigged approach of joining all these states together, making it very hard for us. So he ran a great campaign. Now, will people follow him, his lead to Hillary? It depends. I mean, some people look at Sanders and say, he's my leader, I'm going to follow him. Other people say, I think for myself. And I was turned on by Sanders, but I'm not turned on by Hillary. And I'm going to stay away, and I'm looking for an alternative. And I may vote for Jill Stein. Some may vote for Gary Johnson in a bizarre way. Some may vote for even Trump in a bizarre way. I can't imagine what they're thinking, but somehow they're thinking that. But Jill Stein is certainly the one that should get their votes. She is the most consistent with Sanders, and she was very friendly to Sanders during the campaign, reaching out to him constantly, applauding his voters constantly, even talking to one of his main spokespersons, Nina Turner, about being her vice president. So she had a big outreach to the Sanders base, and so I think she could benefit from that, and I think that was a smart political move on her part, to be very open to them and not to be so stringent in just supporting green perspectives and not very, very progressive socialist perspectives.
Well, Kevin, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We'll post a link to your article about the Nader issue from our website later today. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Kevin Zeese is the co-director of It's Our Economy and an organizer with PopularResistance.org. He was a spokesperson for Ralph Nader in 2004. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.